best day for watching that movie. I'm the leader, Molly. Wow, I'm the leader. Wow, I'm the leader. Oh, I'm the leader. Molly.
Secret report from the guild. The boat has the spice. The spice must flow. You must listen to the Mullet Guild.
Welcome to the Mullet Guild, a special look at Dune from Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet. Find all about the Dune universe here on this podcast. This podcast is for people that have never read Dune and are going into the movie in December 18 this year. Find out all about the world, the planet Arrakis, the different schools, the Swordmasters, the Mentats, the Bene Gesserit, and of course the Navigators. Find out about the medical Sook doctors. Find out about the Atreides, House Carino, and House Harkonnen. All here on Fandom Podcast Network's The Mullet Guild, hosted by the Lethal Mullet. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about Deep Thought. And Deep Thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Welcome to the special episode here tonight on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Podcast, brought to you by Fandom Podcast Network. That's on fpnet.podbean.com, folks. The Lethal Mullet Podcast, hosted by me, the Lethal Mullet, Adam O'Brien, here from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, just up the road from Movie World, folks. Yeah, where they make it all happen. You know, Kong Skull Island was made here, the Phantom, Street Fighter. Yes, we had Van Damme down here wondering what a turnip was. He goes, what is a turnip? Yes, he even asked that on the tours, folks. Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels, and of course, yeah, the great amount of cast they had on that film, and an interesting movie in itself. We'll cover it one day. Hey, how's it sound? Tonight we're going to be looking at Dune Part 2, and wow, what a film. It's huge. It's a sequel. It's the kind of sequel that it's like Godfather Part 2 kind of area, without all the flashbacks, really. And it really has that continuation of one big story. And if they do Dune Messiah, it is, yes, definitely a continuation, but here's where I relate it very much like, obviously, the work of, Coppola's Godfather series. The first two are definitely the same story, like as in together. But when you get to the third one, Godfather 3, which he now calls the Godfather Coda, it's kind of like an afterward, if you like. It's the same with Dune Messiah. Dune Messiah is 12 years or so difference between the end of the Dune novel and the next one. That's hence why Kevin J. Anderson and Brian Herbert have actually done a novel which I really enjoyed, actually. It was called Paul of Dune, which actually shows the build-up of Paul's forces, the jihad that he puts on all the houses, major and minor, and, of course, against the schools. You know, obviously he's battling the Bene Gesserit at times, and, of course, the many other schools that are involved, the Mentats and, of course, Spacing Guild, which really holds a lot of the power. Without the Spacing Guild, you ain't going nowhere. So there's some great stories, and obviously the build-up, and Dune Messiah is an interesting way of looking at, you know, an emperor that's had good intentions, like any leader, great intentions, but then does the ultimate, which is wipes out all their competition with collateral damage that works, everything. And by the time we get to the start of Jim Messiah, you know, he's literally gone to, you know, all these different planets and done some damage, which we won't go any more into because for those that haven't read the novels, you know, you really should go and experience it firsthand. We will talk about spoilers in a sec, but I will tell you when to, you know, obviously hit that point up. But again, having said that, these novels have been out for many decades, and sorry, but not sorry. You know, there's going to be some spoilers that just come out no matter what is going on. Now, just before we get into it, you can catch me, of course, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Snapchat, and any of those other ones if I've left any out. And we're slowly starting to get that all happening. There's going to be a YouTube channel in the next 3 or 4 months set up, and the shows will be going live there. So there's going to be more interaction, a little bit more video like we did last year, but a bit more concrete platform. And maybe perhaps at this stage, a little bit more interaction with some of the other FPN people. Now, with that, we've got Deep Thought Pod coming back. There's a little bit of news for you too, is we didn't do past episode 3. We're planning to do an episode 3 looking at the second book in, of course, Douglas Adams' trilogy in 4 parts or 5 parts by this stage. But don't panic. Whatever you do, don't panic. We'll be definitely grabbing our towels and heading back into, of course, Vogon Sphere, and talking about the great universe of Douglas Adams and The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. With Dan Hadley, of course, he's part of the network. He has Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, and many others. He has Spacebook on Facebook, and he's our mate from Brummy. I've got to tell you, folks, a lot of time for this man. He's always there for a chat. Very funny man and very kind man, very generous with his time, and obviously some of the great artwork you're seeing on this channel and, of course, on the FPN is all courtesy of this man too. You know, I've got quite a few artists involved in the podcasting circuit, but of course, Dan, not only can draw, but he can communicate, and he does it bloody well, let me tell you. We've also got to look at Dune Part 2, also coming up on the return of the Mullet Guild, which will have me and Scott talking. Scott's selling into a new house right now, so we're still going to let him do that, get himself set up, and of course, once he's ready to rock and roll, we're going to be spicing the airways again with that great show and really looking at what made, you know, this new movie what it is. But tonight's going to be all me. It's going to be all about my thoughts on the film. And, you know, I'm one of the biggest fans out there. I've been following Dune for so many years. I'm friends with Kevin J. Ennis and Brian Herbert as well. So always had, you know, a bit of a tie to those guys with their work. And, you know, it's been the thing that I enjoy in my recreation is reading the work that they put out. You know, also their own work as well, the Saga of Seven Suns, Time Web Chronicles, right down to what they're doing now as well, you know, and the Hellhole series that they put out too, which is a lot of fun as well. But, of course, Dune is where my heart's always been, always will be, more so than Star Wars or any of the other galaxies out there. Dune is really something that always stuck to its guns. And, you know, thanks to Frank, Kevin, and, of course, Brian, they really have kept the home fires burning over the years. And, of course, since Chapter House, we finally have who the real Kwisatz Haderach was all along. But, well, leave that till after the spoilers, won't we? So from here on, folks, we're going to be chatting about spoilers about the Dune novels and, of course, the Dune film itself with Denis Villeneuve right here, of course, on the one, the only, Lethal Mullet on the Fandom Podcast Network. Hey there, listeners. Welcome back. Of course, here we go in our main segment here looking at, of course, Dune Part 2, which is directed by Denis Villeneuve and is an amazing science fiction epic and one that's intended to be just as good as the sort of visuals you're getting on Lawrence of Arabia and many others. This is a huge event film. Budget of about $190 million. Some are actually rumored to be more than $200 million. But even then, $190 million, quite conservative in these sort of days. You know, like it's some Marvel projects that are in the 300s. I mean, even Avatar's probably more. Released on the 28th of February 2024 in Australia, this is one of the really fantastic sequels you just have to see, folks. It's it is massive. And, you know, with the likes of Denny, you know, Denny has worked in, obviously, different universes before with Blade Runner 2049 and could have had a feel of where he was going. With Dune, it's a little bit different. Obviously, got the written material in it, and it's an adaptation. It's a sort of different animal. You know, he's given a bit more free rein to create the kind of universe that he wanted to in this. And with Dune, the original film, which came out, it really set up the world, the houses, the obviously the Empire itself, Imperium. It set up Arrakis, the spice, obviously being such a big part of that. And as well, of course, the tribes of the Fremen, which are there on the sands and the sieges of Dune, and there to obviously protect Shai Halud and, of course, the secrets of the spice from those that would come to export it and, definitely change it into something else. So with Dune, unfortunately, it is one of those worlds which does need to be explained really well. And in Denis Villeneuve's, we've really had that happen in that sort of format. I think even in the miniseries, which was done in 2000 on the Sci-Fi Channel with William Hurt and many others and Ian McNeice, that was a great one for really spreading things out. And each part was a part of the book. So part one was Dune, which is book one. Book two was part two, which is Muad'Dib. And part three, of course, with the big action-packed finale was, of course, The Prophet. So it was based on basically the sections that the trilogy that's within the book itself. And that's why that was probably the best adaptation up until then of that sort of story-wise, at least. Definitely not by budget. I think the budget for that was only about $20 million, and that was in 2000s money. So that's not a whole hell of a lot of money something that's a trilogy that they had to do for, obviously, in a miniseries format. So a lot of the CGI is primitive and the costumes are quite laughable. But Vittorio Storaro did an amazing work on the backdrops and visual look of it. And that's why I think it's really past the standard time. Some of the designs of Arakeen as well look great. And I think that's why artists since, like in Steve Yule, who's done the works for Kevin J. Anderson, Brian Herbert's novels since, and some of the redos of Frank's, has used some of those looks from the miniseries because, that was what people knew Dune to be look like at the time. But stepping it up a notch now, we've got this vision that Denny has done, which is such a lived-in world, and it's really an interesting one, particularly with references, I think, to the Lynch series, which I thought was a well-designed series. Amazing. And I say series because the 3 hour feels like it is. The Alan Smithy cut, which we might talk about at a later stage. But anyway, folks, main thing is this first film back in 21, did an amazing job of setting up the universe. And now in 2024, we've got this film that wraps that up. And it's very much like Godfather 1 and Godfather 2. The way I see this, because obviously we've got a third film on the way, Dune Messiah, which is more like a coda. Now, the reason I say that is something that Francis Ford Coppola has done with his Godfather series when he did his new cut of Godfather Part 3. He was never happy with it. So he did a new cut and he called it the Godfather Coda. So it's not really Part 3. It's just where things are at that time. I think it was set in 1990 or late 80s, something like that, when it came out. And it's, again, it's an interesting film itself. But here's where I think the two parts of Dune and Godfather collide. When you think about it, it's almost the same story, right? You've got two powerful families. So you've got the Corleones, and obviously on this side you've got the Greek influence side of the Atreides, which go back to, of course, the old times of Troy and stuff like that, with Agamemnon, which is the House of Atreus. That's how far back this Greek family goes, and obviously it goes all the way to Caladan, the water planet, which, of course, Duke Leto and his family come from. But what's interesting is the Corleones are going through a similar thing where there's a power play on offer and there's a house, or in this case a family, that's going against them in business and in the war itself, in the gangs, the sort of world they have. And with the Mafia, these two are fighting each other, and obviously they take out the head of the family. Head of the family being, of course, the Godfather. The same thing happens, of course, Duke Leto. And, of course, the son has to take up the mantle. So a little bit different in Godfather, we have Sonny first, then we have Michael. And Michael is kind of the Keller youth, even though he's been to war, he's been in World War II, and he's kind of a bit tougher. You know, he's not, doesn't have the interest of wanting to be a leader and has to kind of learn his ways, you know, and especially when he goes to obviously the Mediterranean after he does his first kill. So similar thing with, of course, Paul. You know, they have to go into hiding. He has to go into hiding as well. And when he goes into hiding, obviously he goes with the Fremen. He's learning the Fremen ways. And when he comes back, he's not the same person. He's obviously, you know, he's got some PTSD happening. He's been out there. He's been fighting the good fight, you know, just like Michael will do. But Michael will do, obviously, the way that the Mafia do, the different hits. And then he gets his revenge. Same that happens in this film, folks. He definitely gets his revenge on those that not only turned on him, but went against the family and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of ties to Mario Puzo's novel, to Dune. And I'm pretty sure Dune came first and Godfather came after. But or thereabouts, it might have been the same time. It was 65 for Frank Herbert's Dune. But, I mean, that had also been an analog magazine. So it'd be interesting to see if that was any later than that. But the books, you know, it's an interesting thing that the books are very similar in that way, even though they are not entirely. I mean, I think the thing is that you look at some of the greatness that we've got of, you know, story writing here and there, is that things are influencing each other at all times. And, you know, it's an interesting way to look at this. Now, the film itself came in 1972, yeah, right? So obviously it's something that was interesting, but it was originally published in 1969. So I'm not saying that it is an influenced by, of course, something like Dune, but I mean, it's just interesting that they're very similar in that way. And I think too, Mario Puzo, you know, kind of understood that sort of a story when he had his sort of hot take on that. And no doubt very, very interesting. But it's interesting too that no doubt Danny will be looking at this series and looking at Dune Messiah is that a story on the side, a story to itself, and a story 12 years after the original novel. And I think that's where we're sort of looking at too. So by the time we start this film, this new one, Dune 2, we are literally straight off from what happened in the past one, which is, of course, we've got the fight with Jameis. And, of course, that's where Paul will kill Jameis in a fight with Chris Knives. This is where, of course, Stilgar starts to really set apart his Lisan al Ghaib, thoughts and stuff like that too, where he basically says Paul is special. Paul is the one, the voice from the outer world, the Lisan al Ghaib. And in the movie, the start, we get to start to see some of that happening. You know, everything he says, it is as was written. The Lisan al Ghaib will come and will save us. Of course, the voice from the outer world. Now, to all of us that really know what the story is going on, this is, of course, a very, very fake mythology which the Bene Gesserit have brought to each of the places. And they're sowing the seeds for their work and of course, their breeding programs. They bring in these, you know, to more, let's just say, less technological civilizations, belief and structure and power through prayer and faith and stuff like that too, which they do. You know, it's almost a blind faith for some of these. But some of the Fremen, including Chaney, don't agree with any of that too, and they don't see Paul as a special person. The other one they do is Paul's mum, of course, Jessica, as she is a Bene Gesserit. And with that too comes the training of the Prana Bindu, and of course, the martial artistry, which is, makes them so quick they can anticipate even a Sardaukar's movement. And of course, the shock troops of the Imperial Sardaukar from House Carino come all the way from Seleucus Secundus, the old Imperial planet, before it got moved to Kaitane and got smashed apart in the great houses, destroyed Seleucus Secundus in the jihad years and years before. So with that too, obviously they're starting to learn the ways of the Fremen and building up towards riding the worm. Now, this is all part, of course, of the novel, and it's like any heroic story. He's got hurdles he has to face and people that don't believe in him. But as he builds up towards this, we start to see that even Paul's playing with the mythology itself and, you know, sowing the seeds of doubt so that it will be an even bigger shock when he finally does ride the worm. And when he does an amazing job of it too, may I say. We have the great scene, of course, and this is all shot in IMAX, by the way, folks. So to see this in its format is just amazing. You know, it's one of those things you need to experience at the cinemas, or if you've got a projector at home like I've got, you know, it's going to be pretty good when it comes on home streaming and Blu-ray, 4K, all that sort of stuff. One of the great things about this is you actually get to see it from Paul's view, or the view of the writer of the Sandworm. So, you know, we've read about this all the way back to the old Zensuni writers of you know, the precursors to the Fremen. And we've seen all that in those books, but now we get to experience it proper. Not like the Lynch version, which was still, you know, good for its time. I always thought that was pretty damn good for what it was. But here it's done really, really well. And I think it just goes to show you've seen the effects of things like Arrival and even Blade Runner 2049 knew something special was on the cards, even after June, obviously, too. The scale is the biggest thing with this film, is the scale. So with that, too, we've got the introduction of the Emperor of the Known Universe, Emperor Shaddam IV, played by, of course, Christopher Walken, walking right into this movie like it's his, and now Carino, he's just chilling in Roman robes and waiting for coffee with spice. The great thing is he's playing a character which is old, but a lot older than he's playing. Thanks to the spice that he's taken, he's actually probably the physical age that he is on camera, but as a, you know, character, the character's, you know, closer to 100 or something like that, if I remember right. So, but still looks younger, looks 40, 50 maybe. That's part of what the spice does. It prolongs your age. It gives you more life, you know. But, of course, with that comes addiction. obviously, we get Princess Irulan in this, and obviously she's a huge part of the Dune series. You know, she's got her little epitaphs at the start of every chapter in Dune. So that's part of what she's doing. She's doing, basically, she is writing the story of Muad'Dib and how he became to power and stuff like that. And it's after she becomes the wife of Muad'Dib end that she does all this. This is, of course, she's doing it in Dune Messiah as well. So we've got that, the House Carino. We've also, of course, got, when we go back to Arrakis, Harkonnen. Now, we get to see at the start of the film an attack. And this is, you know, the Fremen getting attacked by what is a guerrilla attack, for, you know, attacking the Harkonnen, I should say, sorry. And it's one of the many spice operations that are getting busted up by Stilgar and his troops. And, of course, every time that Paul makes mistakes at this stage, he's still learning. But he's also getting these sort of spiritual journey that he's on from, of course, he's in looking inside himself from his Bene Gesserit training from Jameis, who's giving him, you know, ideas and stuff like that. It was at the end of the last film too. Getting that sort of inspiration, even though, you know, the character's dead by this stage too. So, you know, they've faced a lot of death. I mean, Duncan Idaho dies in the first movie and last we see of him, more on that later. But, yeah, and then Jameis as well, obviously, too. But this, you know, it's great because we get to see the, how we were meant to see them at the start. We saw a little bit of one at the start of the first movie, but this one we get to see them full range with their las rifles and, of course, rocket launchers and, of course, battling with their Kris knives in little sand pits that they bust out from the ground and just tack out these Sardaukar in, of course, Harkonnen livery, as they say. So we have that. We have, obviously, the training of Paul with that. We also go to Giedi Prime where we get to see Fade, Rautha Harkonnen, the Nar Baron, the Baron-to-be, the Baron of basically that family, once the Baron dies. That's what the Nar Baron means. Then Fade, played by Austin Butler, played, you know, deliciously, shall we say, because he's savoring the role so well. You know, you got Elvis Presley here and Willy Wonka in the same movie. It's pretty funny. But Austin's, you know, looks like a real alien in this, the way they've done him. You know, obviously no eyebrows and no hair. I believe it's a ball cap because he was doing another movie at the same time, so he couldn't lose the hair. And they really went all out. Obviously, he's using the Kali martial art in this massive gladiatorial arena, which is all shot in pitch black. It's black and white. It's the sons of Giri Prime are definitely a bleaching sun, the one that takes out all other forms of light and stuff like that. And again, it's an industrial planet that's just probably destroyed its atmosphere. Hence, they have problems with hair and stuff like that on that planet. Even though in the original novels, folks, they're meant to have red hair. So go figure. That's just something that Denny changed. And, you know, I agree with it. I think it makes them look more alien and definitely evil. They look like vampires, the way they're sort of done. But, yeah, we get to see, obviously, Fade's an absolute psychopath. He kills everyone. He's even got friends in his own little alcove and unit inside Giri Prime, which are geared towards that. And we get to see, obviously, that even Batista's character, the Beast Raban, is considered even lower than him as well, too. So, again, it's all part of the parcel. But, again, really well done. And Austin plays well against Stellan. With Stellan doing that Baron axe, you know, it's just like in Star Wars when he goes, "Where find me Ander? Ander, where is Ander?" You know, the same with, "Give me your Atreides. Come on now." You know, he's got that voice. Of course, Austin's got the same thing. You can see it in the trailer. "May thy knife chip and shatter." And he's got that whole thing. Again, everything played out extremely well and just like the novels. Now, the only thing you don't see in these Giri Prime scenes is Sophia Hawat, Mentat to the Atreides, who is taken prisoner at the end of the first part of the novels and that first sort of book, if you like, inside Dune. And he's given a poison that is administered to him so that he will basically do the right thing and be the Baron's new Golor, or in this case, Mentat Golor, as you could say. But, of course, Fifia's not a Golor, he's just a Mentat. So being a Mentat and the human computer to the Harkonnen, in the book he's actually, you know, trying to find a Atreides soldier that's tough enough that can take out the Nar Baron and hopefully get them all free. So there's an interesting battle behind the scenes in Giri Prime. But it just didn't have the time for it. It was a little bit like doing the, you know, the big dinner table scenes in the original one. It just wouldn't have fit. They just don't have the time. You've got 2 hours and a half, most of these movies. If he kept all that in, we'd be like 4 hours. So we've got that going on, and obviously the Baron is trying to bring Fade into Arrakis to kind of, as his plan, be the savior of you know, the universe, where he gets in there. And after the Raban has, you know, gone and destroyed pretty much all their chances for survival and, of course, of making an empire there, that's when they get a chance to do something about it and try and obviously change things for the better, bringing in Fade as the savior. Now, what's interesting is this is where things start to divert for the novel. As we build up towards, of course, the Fedaiken being built up, that's, of course, the heroes of the Fremen. These are the ones that people look up to, ones that are closest to Muad'Dib. Everyone's starting to believe in Paul. And, you know, he gets his name, obviously his secret name, Usul, and then he gets his name as, of course, Muad'Dib, the mouse on the dunes. And, of course, it looks up to the twin moons, of course, the mouse that's up there in, of course, of Arrakis. But what's great about this is Stilgar still spurning on, going, "Lisan al Gaib, you know, Lisan al Gaib, you know, the one from the outer world, he's going to do it." And people start believing it because they see him riding the worm. The one person that doesn't believe in it is Chaney. And this is where things are getting interesting, is the fact that we don't quite have that love story with Chaney yet. We have times where they're together, they spend time. There's definitely love there. But in this version of Dune, they split apart, and most of it is because Paul's starting to take his journey to become Muad'Dib and, of course, eventually the Emperor of the Known Universe. We have the meetings, the gatherings, which are done by, of course, all the different tribes, Sich Tibia, and, of course, when they do that, and after he's taken, obviously, the holy water and of the, you know, the water of life, and, you know, which is interesting. I like their version. The adaptation of it was really well done. Very similar to the miniseries version, but still really, really well done. not like the Lynch version, which was like 5 second little differential from what they were doing. But it's really the rituals explained, and of course, you know, the part is that he has to pass this poison and change it into clear water in his body, same as the Bene Gesserit would do. They're going to become Sayadina like his mum does. And then, of course, Jessica in this has a very interesting journey in that too. She's kind of seen as a, kind of a demon among the Fremen, the way she's sort of played out, and it's done beautifully and acted really, really well too. I think the work done on that story-wise and by the acting is just spot on. But with Timothée Chalamet, you know, he's got this interesting twist to his, for those that haven't seen it, where he really not only realizes he has to do this path, but this path is bigger than him. You know, it leads to obviously his son and his daughter, Gamina, and of course, Leto the Second down the line as they follow the golden path, path that's bigger than just him. After that, obviously, you know, the Emperor decides to come down to, of course, the planet. The Atreides and, of course, the Fremen have found, of course, the Atreides Atomics, and they're going to use that to, of course, blast the shield walls of Arrakeen so they can get inside and, of course, attack not only the Harkonnen but also the Emperor and his Sardaukar. The showdown happens just as the book happens, but more epic than you could even predict, and if anything, it's very much like the games that we play, of course, of Dune in the role-playing games and on the computer. But here's the twist. As we've got the ending, we get to see the likes of Paul coming into the Emperor's ship that's landed, and he himself kills the Baron. Just literally just walks in and stabs the guy to death about 2 or 3 times. And then, you know, everyone's having a go at him, the Bene Gesserit are, and, you know, Helen Geis-Moyam says, "How dare you?" And, of course, then he invokes silence using the voice. And it's finally done the way it should be, which is, you know, really creepy but also loud and gets right into your guts, which is what the voice is meant to be. It's meant to be something that can manipulate you and take you over. And, of course, it's done really well by the team that did that, the sound work on it too. With that too, of course, we have the showdown with, of course, Fade. This is where you get to see Fade versing, of course, Paul in a knife fight. And, of course, it works out where Paul, of course, takes him out. It's cold. Now, literally, only after this that the Emperor finally succumbs to giving House Atreides full power, in this case, you know, of the whole thing, whole universe. This is where he turns around, and the houses do not recognize Paul as Emperor of the known universe. So they decide to rebel. And, of course, he turns straight to Stilgar, and he says, "Take them all to paradise." Now, what do you think that means? And that's the end of that film. That's literally, that's where it ends. And taking them to paradise, he means wipe them out. Take them out. And we get to see Stilgar and the Fremen and the Fedaiken, all of the warriors of the Atreides. These are, you know, the spiritual warriors of Muad'Dib, taking, you know, the gospel of Muad'Dib to the masses, but also taking out all opposition, getting onto ships and getting ready to take out all the opposition that's out there. And in Dune Messiah, you're going to see exactly what happens with that. And, of course, who returns as well. We'll talk about that at another time because, of course, that's heavily spoiler as well. So this film is mainly an action film. There's not as much, as I would say, in the terms of love. And even though it is a love story between Chani and Paul, Chani takes off in the desert. She doesn't even hang around. You know, she was going to be obviously nothing more than a consort to Paul when Irulan and obviously... Paul get together. That's because, you know, it's bringing two houses together so that he could become emperor, and that too. But the actual work in this is fantastic, folks. We got a return, of course, of Gurney Halleck as well. Really well done, of course, by Josh Brolin. You know, he's an actor I've always liked. I think, you know, he's not obviously the greatest when it comes to acting, but I really like his charisma in this. And, you know, he wouldn't be my first choice for Gurney Halleck. I always thought P.H. Moriarty did it the best. You know, it needed to be somebody a little bit crustier, a little bit older. But Brolin really does pull it off in this one in particular. More so than the other one. I think he was given time. You get to see the belly set in this as well. But, yeah, he gets the time he needs to really develop that character a little bit more. And you will see some other people coming back, folks. I will say that. with that, folks, all right, this is my quick little stab at, of course, looking at this film. It is the best movie I've seen since Mad Max Fury Road. And you know how much I love that movie. That's probably my number one film right now. But Dune and Dune Part 2 collectively hit the number one spot for me. 5 out of 5 here on the Hell and Back scale, of course, of Lethal Mullet Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.